Sri Uddhava inquired, text 26. Although nature and the living entity are constitutionally distinct, O Lord Krishna, there appears to be no difference between them. Did everyone hear that? Although nature, Prakriti, and the living entity and the soul, because he's described how the soul and material nature are clearly distinct, different ways to categorize them, are constitutionally distinct. They're in fact, by nature, by their foundation, they are different in quality. Although the other elements of the material world, they are not different in quality, and you can describe them as 5 and 10 and 20 because each one comes from the other. But the soul and material nature are completely different in quality in the sense that one doesn't come from another. They both material nature and the soul come from the Supreme Soul, but the soul doesn't come from nature by constitution. So different from the other foundational elements that were previously described. But that appears, from what it appears, what it seems, as if there's no distinction between them, because they are found residing within one another. Thus the soul appears to be within nature, and nature within the soul. So, Devahuti actually asked this question. Perhaps you can find it in 3rd Canto, 27th chapter, and the 18th verse. She asks basically the same question. If you take away the material nature, is there anything left to the person, practically speaking? 27:18. You're talking about the verse? What are you talking about? 27 what?
No, the third canto reference.
27:18. 27th chapter, the 18th verse. So, do you have that? Do you have it? Could you read it? Loudly, please.
In the 17, she says, "My dear Brahmana, does material nature ever give release to the spirit soul? Since one is attracted to the other eternally, how is their separation possible?" In 18, "As there is no separate existence of the earth and its aroma, or of water and its taste, there cannot be any separate existence of intelligence and consciousness."
So almost the same question, because they seem to be so connected since time immemorial. Within the soul, the consciousness of the soul is symptomized by its consciousness. There appears clearly to be so many material things in the consciousness. So in matter seems to be in the soul, and the soul is right within matter. So this question is going to be addressed. Here, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, "In this material world, it appears as if life cannot exist independently of the material body. Indeed, the living entity and material nature seem to be inseparable, from the time of conception within the mother's womb right up to the time of death. In conditional life, we cannot imagine how life can be a separate entity without dependence upon matter for its manifestation." So therefore, the other religions that they tried to conceive of what the person is, and they conclude actually that the person is a combination of soul or spirit, something eternal and something temporary. That's who he is. You cannot define him as just soul, because he never seems to exist separately from matter. And you can't define him just as matter, because he seems to require some spiritual existence for him to manifest life. So there's some very, very blurry border between the soul and the body, and this is basically what we perceive. So Uddhava is asking this question, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, in conditional life we cannot imagine how life can be a separate entity without dependence on matter for its manifestation. Of course, the material body cannot exist without the presence of the spirit soul, and there appears to be a mutual dependence, because you don't see just souls walking around without bodies. Here, Uddhava wants to clarify all these points, and he continues, O lotus-eyed Krishna, he's going to continue his questioning for a few verses. O lotus-eyed Krishna, O omniscient Lord, you know everything, O Lord. So therefore you'll be able to answer my question. Please cut this great doubt out of my heart with your own words, which exhibit your great skill in reasoning. From you alone, the knowledge of the living entity, living beings arises. And by your potency, that knowledge is stolen away. Your Maya takes away that knowledge and causes us to fully identify with the body and not be able to conceive of ourselves as anything other than the body. When we think of who we are, we think of some configuration of the body and the mind. So this, Uddhava says, that knowledge of our complete difference from the body and mind is stolen away also by your potency. Indeed, no one but yourself can understand the real nature of your illusory potency, because one in illusion cannot understand of the nature of the illusion that's bewildering him, because he's right within that illusion, so he can't separate himself from it, get an objective enough point of view of the illusion. And that's the problem. We can't understand reality with our mind separate from illusion. We can't understand reality from illusion separate from the mind, because the mind is an illusion. So the very thing that we're using to examine reality is tinted by illusion. It's affected by illusion. It's covered by illusion. So how can it get the objectivity required to see itself and see illusion as separate? So he's saying, no one you, because you, the Maya or illusion comes from you, so therefore it is separate from you. Illusion is covering me, but it cannot cover you. So therefore only you, who is the source of Maya, can understand the true nature of your illusion and potency, and therefore only you can understand reality, and you can understand truth. And then that's a nice analysis. See Bhagavan Uvacha, text 29. Prakriti, this is Krishna's, the beginning of Krishna's reply. Prakriti Purusha Cheti, that thus there is the Purusha, the enjoyer, the living entity, meaning just like Purusha Prakriti Stohi, Bhunkte Prakriti Janiya, the Purusha and Prakriti. And then he says, Vikalpa Purushar Sabha. Vikalpa means they are completely different. There is a complete distinction between the Purusha, the soul, the person, and Prakriti. O best amongst Purushas, O best amongst men. Esha Vaikarika Sarga Guna Vyatikara Atmaka. And this manifested creation, the saga, the manifest creation, is vaikarika. It's always transforming, being founded upon the agitation of the modes of nature. Vikaraka atmaka. It is based on the modes of material nature. This whole creation is always shifting and moving and changing. That's prakriti. And that's what we are not. The soul is different from this always shifting, changing Prakriti. This is the difference between the soul and matter. And in this sense, the super soul, being qualitatively, as was described before, the same as the soul and the super soul are qualitatively the same, they both share this in common. They are non-changing despite all the changings, the transformations that go on in the material world. Now for 29, Srinath Chakravarti Thakur says, material nature is subject to change, but the Supreme Lord is always unchangeable. Nature is manifold, but the Supreme Lord is without a second. There's many manifestations of nature, I think the meaning is. Nature is dependent, but the Supreme Lord is fully independent. Material nature is manifest with the help of others, whereas the Supreme Lord is Swayam Prakash, is self-manifest. In these ways, there are many differences between the material nature and the Supreme Lord. Such distinctions are being described in these four verses, 29, 30, 31, 32, the distinctions between material nature, matter, and spirit, and the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is certainly distinct from his energy. Material bodies are produced of the material nature, and all material forms are subject to transformation, being agitated by the three modes of material nature. 30. So this is the common both of the soul and the super soul. 30. My dear Uddhav, my material energy comprising three modes and acting through them, through the modes, manifests the varieties of creation along with the varieties of consciousness for perceiving them. So we've spoken about this point many times previously. It takes a certain type of consciousness to perceive the varieties in nature. Sometimes there are certain moths that are poisonous, and a certain bird can see the distinction between the poisonous moths and the non-poisonous moths. Well, we might not be able to. So different varieties of consciousness are manifest from different bodies and have different sense of perception. Like flies perceive, they have such a subtle sense of movement. Monkeys can move so fast and they perceive different things. Flies perceive light in a way that we don't perceive light. Mosquitoes perceive heat in a way that we don't perceive heat. The heat coming from bodies, they immediately can sense it, and they go towards it. The manifest result of material transformation, so the total result of the transformations of the material world has three aspects, adiatmic, adidaivic, and adibhautik. We'll read the comment of Vishwanath on this verse. The diversity of nature is described herein. The various types of consciousness within the different material bodies reveal different aspects of the Lord's creation, different opulences too. The seemingly endless varieties of material consciousness are created by the transformation of the three modes of material nature. In this way, the multifaceted material nature transforms into many categories, but can be simply understood in three divisions, adiatmic, adibhautik, and adidaivika. And the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says there's three divisions of the spiritual energy too, but these don't have anything to do with the divisions of the material energy. The divisions of the spiritual energy are Sandini, Samvit, and Ladini. Now, we'll hear more about the Adidaivika and Adiatmika and Adibhautik. This has also been described in which canto? And which chapter? And what chapter? 10th canto. Sight, visible form and the reflected image of the sun within the aperture of the eye all work together to reveal one another. So there are three elements or principles that interactively work that allows someone to see, and that is the adibhautika, adidaivika, and adiatmika. There's the sense of sight, there is the eyeball, and then there is the demigod, the adidaivika demigod, the body, adibhautika, and then the energizer of it, the adiatmika. So the person, these who is actually has the experience of sight. So these three work combinedly together to give us the experience of seeing something. And none of them are independent. They can't work independently. You can't see without, if the person isn't there, you can't see. If the consciousness isn't there, you can't see. If the demigod isn't there, you can't see. And if the eyeball isn't there, you can't see. So they all three work interdependently. So this, as explained in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, is the difference between the Supreme Lord, that he is the Ashraya, he is the one that everyone is dependent on, but he himself is independent. So again, we're talking quite philosophically here, defining the Lord's position and how he is different from the material nature. Interdependence and independence. But the original sun standing in the sky is self-manifested. Similarly, the Supreme Soul, the original cause of all entities, who is thus separate from all of them, acts by the illumination of his own transcendental experience as the ultimate source of manifestation of all mutually manifesting objects. That's quite a sentence, but the other objects are interdependent, dependent upon each other, and the Supreme Lord is independent. We'll read some of the purport here. And again, this is described, and I've tried my best to explain it in the Unveiling His Lotus Feet book in the beginning of the ninth chapter. Purport. Form is recognized by the function of the eye. And the eye's function is understood by the presence of perceivable form. There is the form, the object, and then there's the eye. So the eye perceives the form, and the form that it sees, the form that it's seen, is the function of the eye, and they define each other. Without the eye having anything to see, it wouldn't be an eye, because an eye is that which sees. And without being seen by the eye, the form, we wouldn't have any information, we wouldn't know anything about it. So this interaction of sight and form further depends on the presence of light provided by the demigods, whose service of universal management depends on the presence of those who are to be managed. In other words, they're managers, and if there's nothing to manage, they wouldn't have anything to do. They wouldn't be demigods or managers. Like a king without a kingdom, there's no meaning to the term of him being a king. You could say he was a king or he will be a king, but he's not a king unless he has a kingdom. So the demigods are dependent upon their function of management for them to be considered demigods. So all three of these are considered independent. Thus, the three factors, adiatma, represented by the senses, such as the eye, adibhuta, the sense object, such as form, I'm not sure if that's the way I define them, but this is the proper one, and adidaivika, the influence of the controlling deities, exist in an interdependent relationship. The sun globe itself is said to be self-manifest, self-luminous, and self-experiencing. It does not share the interdependence of the senses and sense objects, although facilitating their function. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead facilitates the interdependent experience of all living entities. That means that those who are interdependent depend on that one entity who everyone is dependent upon. So we see and we say, I want to see God. But we are not independent in our ability to see. In fact, we are quite dependent on our ability to see. So without something other than our own ability, we cannot see at all, what to speak of see God. And yet we proudly say that I would like to see God, and I won't believe in God unless I see Him. That's what the famous, who was the cosmonaut who, that first Russian went into space? Huh? Yeah. And he said, Prabhupada always liked to say, he was looking for his beloved Moscow down there, when he was looking there, and he said, I went in space, but I could not see God. Well, what does that mean?
This space, this is Earth, this space is this height. See, this is Earth, that's how far he went.
Not very far, in other words. He didn't really hit space. He hit the lower limits of space, perhaps. And space is vast. So it is an arrogant statement. It's an arrogant statement, as if the implication was, God doesn't exist because I didn't see Him. How many of you have ever seen, what's the Mataji's name, who's the president of India? Pushpa something?
Patel.
She is Pushpa Patel. Raise your hand if you've seen Pushpa Patel. I went to Delhi, but I did not see Pushpa Patel. Similarly, the sense organs, namely the skin, ears, eyes, tongue, and nose, those are the sense organs, in case your mind was still thinking of Delhi and Pushpa Patel, as well as the functions of the subtle body, namely conditioned consciousness, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Chitta is the conditioned consciousness. Can all be analyzed in terms of the threefold distinctions of sense, object of perception, and presiding deity. That means adiatmika, adibhautika, and adidaivika. When the three modes of nature are agitated, the resultant transformation appears as the element false ego in three phases. So from the three modes of material nature comes yours truly, the false ego. The most wonderful and important creation in existence. And everything in the material existence is based on false ego. In three phases, goodness, passion, and ignorance, generated from the Mahatattva, which is itself produced from the unmanifest Pradhan, this false ego becomes the cause of all material illusion and duality. So this is a summary, another reinstatement, very similar to in Kapila Muni's teaching. Which chapter is that, 25 or 26? Which one is it? Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. Yes, 26 or 25, one of the two, unless you can say authoritatively. Yes, thank you. 26th chapter. Very much a representation of this is the one of the final times we're going to hear this. So because Krishna himself is saying it, he said it himself in the form of Lord Kapila, we can understand it's very important. And this is basically Sankhya philosophy. And Sankhya philosophy is basically Jnana Yoga. And Jnana Yoga is basically to dissociate the mind, or rather the consciousness, rather the soul, from all these created things. This is the purpose of Sankhya Yoga, Jnana Yoga. And then to not engage in these things, with these elements at all. So in 34, the speculative argument of philosophers, this world is real. No, it's not real. Is based on incomplete knowledge of the Supreme Soul And it's simply aimed at understanding material duality. Although such argument is useless, persons who have turned their attention away from me, their own true self, are unable to give it up. There's such an attachment to not only being correct, but to speculate on the nature of the material world, which is in essence inconceivable. It's subtle, it's too subtle, it's inconceivable. So it is incomplete to see it's real and it's not real. So what is the complete knowledge then? To see it is as Krishna's. Of course, it is real in the sense it is proceeding from the real, but it is not real in the sense that it is shifting and changing like the sands by the ocean. And to mistake it as eternal is illusion. And that is the tendency of Maya, to make us think, you know, if we were asked, do you think the material world is illusion? We would say, do you think the material world is eternal? No one would say, oh, I think it's eternal. I can see it's always changing. But we perceive it as if it's always going to be the way it was yesterday and today. And like, say if you haven't been to Vrindavan for 20 years, and then you come and you see how it's built up and it's changed some, it's shocking. You get shocked because we carry around a concept in our mind that this is the way things are and we don't expect them to change. And yet, they always do change. It is the very nature of the material world. Even though we don't philosophically think of it as eternal, as something of this world is eternal, but we practically don't expect any changes to occur. And we're surprised when they do occur. When we get old, we're very surprised. How did that happen? So that's the illusion, to think something that's changing and shifting is eternal. But to think that it is illusory and it doesn't really exist is another kind of illusion, because it has its source. It has its source in the eternal Supreme Lord. And also, if you think that, you know, if people see something change immediately, a big change immediately, it's really a shock to the system. Unless we're completely surrendered to Krishna, the way the material consciousness works is that it requires the illusory security, the illusory security that this material world is very stable. Otherwise, it becomes very, very disturbed, and because it has to hold on to something. So it has to hold on to the material securities, even though it may even know that there is no true security in material security. But it has to hold on to something. So what we are, of course, asked to hold on to is not the illusory securities of this material world, but rather to Krishna, the lotus feet of Krishna. So very easy to see and say, but very difficult unless one is pure and surrendered to actually do that, to hold only to the lotus feet of Krishna. But what else do we really have? We could theoretically understand about the material the insecurities of the material world, but if we don't practically learn to always depend on Krishna, what will we hold on to at the moment of death? We will grasp for something that is not truly a shelter, durasraya, and it will become very difficult for us, because it's like trying to, you're drowning and you try to hold on to smoke. I mean, what are you going to get out of that value? just vanishes. As you try to hold on to it, it just turns into what it really is, non-substance. So this was the question of Uddhava. Oh, excuse me, this was Krishna's answer to Uddhava's question. Now, Uddhava is not finished asking questions. He's in 35 and 36, he's going to ask another one. Sri Uddhava said, O Supreme Master, the intelligence of those dedicated to fruitive activities is certainly deviated from you. This is the modes of material nature again in action. Please explain to me how such persons accept superior and inferior bodies by their materialistic activities and then give up such bodies. O Govinda, this topic is very difficult for foolish persons to understand. Being cheated by illusion in this world, they generally do not become aware of these facts. What facts? What facts don't they become aware of? What don't they understand?
The bodies change.
Yeah, the bodies.
Huh? Superior and
inferior. Yeah, that we can understand, that there's superior and inferior bodies. But what don't we understand?
To give up such bodies.
Well, that, if we're patient, we'll do that. That will happen automatically. It doesn't even take understanding. But what is the difficult thing to understand in this? Being cheated by illusion in this world, they generally do not become aware of these facts. What is the fact that it's very hard to become aware of?
There's nothing tangible. You can't enjoy it.
But what's the point of this particular thing? How persons accept bodies because of their materialistic activities and then give up such bodies. And not only am I not my body, but no one is their body, neither the dog with the soft eyes out there, nor the pigs in the streets, or the birds flying all over, or the gentlemen operating these huge cranes over there. They're huge. There's some that are digging up this earth of Vrindavan. I mean, the person who's driving it is not his crane body. He's the driver. So according to the fruit of action, the actions we perform, good and bad, we get one type of a body or another. And each type has its opulences, its strengths, its weaknesses, but in the material world, each will have its drawbacks, imperfections, and they all have the common element of death awaiting them. So people don't understand this. This is one of the main topics that's been... So that this is the third set of questions, if I'm not mistaken, yes? The first set of questions was what that he asked?
Can we distinguish this prakriti from the soul?
And then Krishna began by saying there are different opinions about this. How many elements? The first question was about the elements. The second one is about that. So the elements, so first, there's different opinions and there's different modes of material nature that affect people's consciousness. And Krishna wanted to say he's putting this point in that the modes of nature are very powerful. And then he's asking the question, can we actually separate the soul from the supreme Lord from the material nature and the living entity from material nature? And the answer, unequivocally, he's saying, yes, we can. They have nothing to do with each other. And that our perception of reality, which our visual perception of reality is a combination of these three interdependent forces which rely on each other for their function and existence, if their existence is defined in terms of their function. But the Supreme Lord is independent of all these things. So first, the difference between matter and spirit, and then second, the distinction between the two kinds of spirits, the two kinds of souls, the soul and the super soul. One is interdependent and the other is independent. And now, about the illusion that's covering everyone and not allowing them to see that the bodies are acquired by a soul according to how he acts in this world. So again, he's pushing. That Uddhava is pushing it, and Krishna's answers are pushing it to the next chapter, which is again the song, the Avanti Brahmana, which he's going to talk about. I want to get out of here. This complex material nature, which is you can't even see who you are in it. You can't distinguish between what you are and what you're not. And there's an interdependence on everything, and you can't pull yourself out. You cannot conceive of yourself due to the nature of the Lord's illusion and due to the nature of the things that you need to perceive with are you're not aloof from them. So you can't perceive yourself as independent, an actual spirit particle of Krishna because of this. And then this is the Supreme Lord. So it's going to push to this point of, I want to get out. I'm trying to enjoy, like the Avanti Brahmana. It's a spoiler. You're telling the ending of the movie before it begins, before you've seen it. The Avanti Brahmana was trying to enjoy it. In what way was he trying to enjoy? Who knows? He had his wealth. Every living entity has some wealth. What was he trying to do? He was a miser. And we are all like that. We want to hold on to the thing that's going to give us our enjoyment, especially this thing. But regardless of how we hold on to it and try to get our enjoyment from it, it becomes the cause of our displeasure ultimately, and everyone becomes displeased with us. If we don't... What's the opposite of a miser? A Mahatma. A person. Manahapmanas tu mamparta daivam prakritamasrita. That he takes shelter of the internal energy and he holds on to that. But before you can hold on to that internal energy, you have to let go of that energy. So it being pushed towards that. And when one realizes, here's the philosophical points, but when one realizes in a practical sense, like the Avanti Brahmana finally realize through the same process that Pingala of self-realization, the process known as frustration and disappointment. Became frustrated, disappointed, understood, and finally said, I have had enough. Forget it, as they would say in New York. Forget it. I've had enough. Or in contemporary jargon, I'm out of here. That's what they say, the youth. I'm out of here. I've had enough. And I don't care. I don't care what anyone... I don't care what happens on that level anymore. I don't care what anyone says on that level anymore. I don't care what... I don't even care what I think anymore. I'm out. I'm finished. Enough. Enough is enough. That's the Avanti Brahmana. He's just said, okay. Thanks, but no thanks. I'm leaving. Sorry for all the slang all thrown into one little package here. So he's asking the question, you know, on a philosophical level, how come... What is the truth in this? That person, the intelligence of one dedicated to fruit of activities, trying to enjoy this world, deviated means separate. He's separate from you. So What happens to a person like that? He's going to get one material body or another, depending upon how he's acted within this world. But being cheated by illusion, they generally do not become aware of these facts. So what's the illusion that cheats them? So remember, it's already been said that the modes of material nature are pushing this all around. So what's the illusion that causes us to be under the control of the modes of material nature? Yes, and what does false ego make us do? Yes, exactly. Ishwaraham. It's me. I'm the enjoyer. Purusha, Prakriti, Stohi. Bhunkte means enjoy. Prakriti, Jan, the things produced of material nature. And in attempting to enjoy them, we are trapped by them, by those modes, because the ingredients and the force, by touching the ingredients of which are come from the modes of material nature, we're caught by the force of the modes of material nature, the powers of the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance. So therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has said, if one actually understands that no configuration, no combination, no variety of the modes of material nature can make us happy, no matter how we reorganize it, such a person has taken the greatest step forward in spiritual life. That's the Avanti Brahman who we shall hear of. And unless we have actually come to that realization, because sometimes the mind holds out with just this one thing that I'm not, even though intellectually I'm sure it won't bring me happiness, but still that taste is still there. And I want it. Just to taste it, just to make sure it's not, just to get the kick of it. And the Avanti Brahmana went beyond that. And that taste is another song. The general taste that captures everyone is one of the next songs that's going after the Avanti Brahmana's song. And that will be the song of who? Purarava. So anyway, Krishna begins his reply. The material mind of men is shaped by the reactions of fruitive work. Along with the five senses, it travels from one material body to another. The spirit soul. So, did you hear that? Listen to it again. The material mind of men is shaped by the reactions of fruitive work. Easy to understand. The mind, what we perceive, what we accept, reject, is based on what we've done. We like certain things, don't like certain things, etc. Along with the five senses, it travels from one material body to another. Did you hear that? What does that mean? So one part of it is that the mind travels from one material body to another, but also along with it the
soul.
Is that what it said? The soul? The five senses.
The mind generates the senses.
Right. So it's, but we usually think of the senses as the body. But obviously the body doesn't travel from body to body. Along with the mind, the subtle sense, the senses exist in the mind. Is that true, that the subtle senses exist in the mind? Do you have that experience? Huh?
Yes.
What's an example of that?
You can see with closed eyes.
Huh?
You can see with closed eyes.
We can see with our eyes closed, yes. Another example?
Dream.
Yes,
we
another
thing.
We experience all the senses in our mind. That's really where the sense experience is taking place.
And all the objects are there.
Because it's all existing in the mind. Therefore, Prabhupada said this world is a mental speculation. We're thinking I'm interacting. Where is the pleasure? Where is the pleasure? Like I'm drinking some water. Where is this pleasure? Where is the pleasure part taking place? It's the mind. It's not in exactly in the interaction between the senses and the sense objects. It's in the mind. A subtle point. And depending upon your mind, you're like one sense object or another. The subtle senses are in the mind. The senses are subtly in the mind. Where is the, like we say, that really tasted good. But where is the experience of good? Is it in the object? Or is it in your tongue? Or is it in your mind?
The taste is in the object.
The goodness is in the mind. The thinking, it's good, I really like it, I want some more. That's not in the object. The thing that you're experiencing is in the mind. If it's in the object, then everyone who had a tongue would like it. But everyone who has a tongue doesn't like the same thing. Some people who have tongues, like, I don't know if any of you have ever eaten. I saw one time in Hong Kong, this fellow, he was starting to rant and rave. He was trying to attract a crowd. And then he, after he had a crowd, he put his hand in this basket and he pulled out a cobra. And he was, and then he went, arr! And he bit off its head. Of course, he didn't chew it and eat it and say it was good. But the things that some people eat, he was trying to make a point. I'm not sure what the point was, but he was trying to make a point. See how powerful? This is what happens if you take this medicine or something like that that's made out of snake something or others. But the idea being that different people, according to their mentality, will have different sense objects. The goodness, it actually, it's in the interaction between the senses and the mind, and all this interdependence is where the pleasure is. But mostly it's in the mind. And we think it's in the object. And therefore, when we see all the advertising, we begin to experience pleasure as anticipating that it's going to bring us happiness that actually isn't in the object at all. And therefore, we are fooled again and again by them, by the advertisers exploit our rascal mind. In any case, along with the five senses, the mind travels from one material body to another. The spirit soul, although different from his mind, follows it. The soul follows the mind. Adishtayam manasthayam visha upasevate. The mind, because the mind wants, yam yam vapi smaram sadatad bhava bharat, according to the mood of the mind, the soul goes, you get your next body, and the soul comes along. The mind, bound to the reactions of fruit of work, always meditates on the objects of the senses according to his karma. Both those that are seen in this world and those that are heard about from Vedic authority. So heavenly delights also contemplating. Consequently, the mind appears to come into being and to suffer annihilation along with the objects of perception. And thus its ability to distinguish past and future is lost. This is about the death of the body, which is described in the next verse. But we'll read from the purport here, in the second paragraph. The conditioned soul is overwhelmed by the constant flow of material experience consisting of direct perception and abstract contemplation of the objects of this world. One thereby loses his transcendental memory of his relationship with God. So too much contemplation of the senses, too much disturbance in the mind to be able to perceive the Supreme Lord, which is actually possible even from the mode of goodness. To some degree it's possible. As soon as one identifies with this world, he forgets his eternal identity and surrenders to the false ego created by Maya, based on his desire to enjoy the objects of the senses. When the living entity passes from the present body to the next body, which is created by his own karma, he becomes absorbed in the pleasurable and painful sensations of the new body and completely forgets the experience of the previous body. This kind of talking about Krishna is why on the opening class we said this: the Uddhava Gita gives you an out-of-body experience that it cuts philosophically the identification with the body. This total forgetfulness of one's previous material identity, which comes about for one reason or another, is called death. So this also, Kapila Muni explains the exact same point in the 31st chapter of, which I believe is the final chapter of the third canto, text 44 through 46. He defines death and birth as the identification with the new body and the stopping of the identification of the soul and the mind with the body is birth and death. Here's the definition of birth in 40. O most charitable Uddhav, what is called birth is simply a person's total identification with a new body. One accepts the new body just as one completely accepts the experience of a dream or a fantasy as reality. When we're dreaming something, we don't deny our complete identification with the person that we're experiencing as acting in the dream. We completely, immediately identify with it. We don't even question it. And when we wake up, we don't question, why did I identify? We're sometimes really happy that identification is broken by waking up, but we don't question that it seems like I identify with every situation I'm in, so maybe, and I'm not, and I clearly just experienced that I wasn't really being eaten by the tiger, as we would usually say. So maybe in a similar way, even though I'm completely identifying with the situation I'm in now, including the bodily one, maybe that really doesn't have anything to do with me, and maybe there's a wake-up situation where I'm consciously aware of not being my body, in the same way that there was a wake-up situation where I immediately became aware of the fact that I wasn't my dream identity. I was neither flying in the sky, which was pleasurable, nor the king of France, which was pleasurable until they decided to cut off my head. Who was that? Louis XIV?
16.
Not good.
16.
Prashanta has forgotten.
I'm good in geography.
Okay, what part of France is the Basque?
The south.
Okay, so you still remember. But none of these have anything to do with us. I remember when I first left the United States in 1970 or something, and I started traveling around, and before that, being a young college student I never really identified with being an American. But then when you start traveling and you see people from other countries and people start criticizing America, it's so surprising how much the false ego really doesn't like it. False ego doesn't like it. Because that identification is very strong. This is also a verse in the Bhagavatam that even a sadhu, it's hard for him to break his identification with his own desha, his own country. Somewhere in the Bhagavatam, I think,
Krishna
in the text.
Says, Bhoma Ijadi.
Yeah, but in a different place, but yeah. Bhoma Ijadi. But I think the residents of Vrindavan actually say this, something like that, too. But yes, you go ahead and say more on this.
He says this about himself.
Yeah.
Krishna.
what's he talking about when he says about himself?
He gives an example. He greets the sages and says that they are like cows. Mm. By your grace only we can advance.
This is in 84?
Kurukshetra.
Yeah, 84. So Krishna continues. Just as a person experiencing a dream or daydream does not remember his previous dreams or daydreams, a person situated in his present body, although having existed prior to it, thinks that he has only recently come into being. Swapnam maro manorattam chetam manoratta, traveling on the chariot of the mind. Swapnam, a dream or a daydream. He does not remember, nasmarati praktaram, his previous dream. Do we ever consider that? When people ask us, how come I don't remember my previous body? If I'm not, do you remember when you're in a dream? Do you remember your previous dream? No, because the identification is so full. So does that mean you never dreamt anything before because you weren't conscious of your dream, your past dream, and while you're in your current dream? No, it doesn't mean that at all. So similarly, although existed prior to his present body, he thinks that he has only recently come into being. Apurvam chanupashyati. He thinks that I have no past. Very good preaching by Krishna to Uddhava. Quite powerful. Quite philosophical. Because the reality is, if we want to go forward, we can't be always looking back. We can't be looking back if we want to go forward. We have to go forward. We have to be detached. This is the reality. Because the mind, which is the resting place of the senses, has created the identification with the new body, the threefold material variety of high, middle, and low class appears, because the question was about the different, Uddhava asked the question about the different bodies according to the fruit of activity, superior and inferior. So because the mind, which is the resting place of the senses, has created the identification with a new body, the threefold material variety of high, middle, and low class appears as if present within the reality of the soul. It is because of the mind. Sub, asub. Auspicious, inauspicious, a good material situation, a bad material situation. The Ivanti Brahmana will cut all identification with the material world, which means a cutting all identification with the material mind and believing it. And also it means adopting a full identification with Krishna. And not only with Krishna, it means identifying with being with as Krishna's servant. That's who I am. Not I am Krishna, but I am Krishna's servant. Thus, the self creates external and internal duality. Just as a man may give birth to a bad son, a good man may give birth to a bad son, and a good soul may give birth to bad bodies by a bad mind. He may find himself situated in a bad body, just as a good person may at times have a bad son. My dear Uddhava, material bodies are constantly undergoing creation and destruction by the force of time. But I like my body. I mean, I'm attached to it. It's me, isn't it? Well, sorry. But material bodies are constantly undergoing creation and destruction by the force of time. Krishna also tells us to Arjuna, for one who has taken his birth, death is certain. And for one who has died, birth is certain. So it's everyone is just under this kalosman lokachaya krit, the force of time. Kala Rupa, Krishna's Kala Rupa, it destroys everything. Time I am, I've come to destroy everyone whose swiftness is imperceptible. But because of the subtle nature of time, no one sees this. It is subtle, it is gradual, and yet it is swift. It's inevitable, it's continuous, it's unstoppable. But because it's gradual, no one perceives it. The different stages of transformation of all material bodies occur just like those of the flame of a candle, the current of a river, or the fruits of a tree. That the candle is so many different little rays coming out, and each ray has its beginning, and then it's gone. But yet we see the candlelight as one continuous illumination, although it's not one continuous illumination. Or we see the river as something constant in front of us, but you cannot step into the same river twice because the river is always changing. New water comes, the previous water goes. And the current or the fruit of a tree, the tree is giving fruit, but it's all coming and going and coming and going and coming and going. Although the illumination of a lamp consists of innumerable rays of light undergoing constant creation, transformation, and destruction, a person with illusory intelligence, we see the pattern of it. We don't see what's actually happening. We see with our mind. The mind wants to see illumination from a lamp, and it doesn't see the tiny rays, even though when it looks, it can see them, but the mind doesn't want to see that. The mind doesn't want to see the shifting, changing, continuous nature of the river. So it doesn't see it. It doesn't register, so to speak. We don't see the frames of the movie. We see the continuous action. We don't see the changing of the body. But it is changing. Who will say that their body is not changing? When you see the picture of your friend after 40 years, you say, you've gotten old, or you've changed so much, and it's a bit shocking or sometimes embarrassing. But, well, did we expect it or not? We didn't expect them to get older. We did, but it's still a surprise. That's the point, because the mind wants to hold on to the temporary and consider it eternal, because it gets its security in that way. Illusory security. I mean, how good is illusory security? I mean, how valuable is illusory security? How valuable is counterfeit money? And if you think it's, raise your hand if you think it's valuable, because we're selling some out in the back. and there's another Americanism. There was one famous, many, who's long ago, dead movie star named W.C. Fields, who said, never give a sucker a break. In other words, if someone's a fool, exploit him. Take his money. So if we're selling counterfeit money out there, does anyone want some? We have a good price for it. Or Prabhupada actually gave this example too, with gold. There's a cheating system that someone walks around, there's a crowd. I've seen this kind of thing in Chaurangi in Calcutta. Someone walks around and said, oh, did anyone see my gold ring? I've lost my gold ring. Did you find my gold ring around? It's so valuable. I've lost it. Has anyone seen it? Have you seen my gold ring? And then his friend is there. Hey, you want to buy a gold ring? I have a good, real good gold ring. I'll give you a good price on it. And of course, they're both cooperating together in a cheating process. Prabhupada told us. And it's not a gold ring that he's selling. He'll give you a good price on on fake gold. They'll give you a terrible price on fake gold, and it'll cheat you and it'll take all your money. And because we want to believe that it's real, we're fooled. We become, in American slang, suckers, fools, liable to be cheated. So Krishna is saying, similarly, although the material body, this is the great cheating he's saying. And therefore he says, I am the greatest of cheaters. Although the material body of a human being is constantly undergoing transformation, those who are simply wasting their lives falsely think and say that each particular stage of the body is the person's real identity. So if I am my body, well, which body am I then? If I am my body, am I the body of the young 5-year-old, or the body of the 16-year-old, or the body of the 18-year-old, because, or the body of the 63-year-old? If I'm my body, which body am I? Because they all were me, so which one is really me? And then when the people see the picture, they say, oh, you've changed. Well, I don't feel like I've changed. You going to the Himalayas or what? You've had a yes. Because after hearing this kind of preaching, one thinks, what am I going to? What's this material? What's bodily life all about? It's just I'm so foolish. I better become advanced and stop this identification, because time isn't stopping as we talk. Time isn't stopping, and my body is aging, and my time in this body is shortening with every moment. A person does not actually, and it continues even more, take birth out of the seed of his past activities, the person meaning the soul, nor being immortal does he die. By illusion, the living being appears to be born and to die. Just as the fire in connection with firewood appears to begin and then cease to exist, while actually the fire is within the wood. Impregnation, gestation, actually, and how did the fire get in the wood? How did the fire get in the wood? By the sun. Huh? But how did it get there? Because wood is earth and fire is fire. It's a separate element. So how did it get there? The wood is a natural storage system from the fire which originates in the sun. This is the analysis. So all fire, petrochemical, like one of the biggest oil companies is called Sun Oil, because that's where the fire comes from. That's where the energy comes from. It comes from the sun. All of it comes from the sun. So the fire appears to begin and then to cease, but the fire is separate. Impregnation, gestation, birth, infancy, childhood, youth, middle age, old age, and death are the 9 ages of the body. These are we commonly call them the mikara, transformations of a body. And although the material body is different from the self, because of the ignorance due to material association, and what causes the material association? It's maya. And what causes the maya? False ego. Which what's born of false ego? The tendency to enjoy. And because of ignorance due to material association, one falsely identifies oneself with the superior and inferior bodily conditions, which is, again, referring back to Uddhava's question. Sometimes a fortunate person is able to give up such mental concoctions. And as Prabhupada said, for an intelligent person, this can take a moment. And he identifies with what? Not with the body, but I am Krishna's. Krishna's what? I am his servant eternally. By the death of one's father or grandfather, one can surmise. What's a synonym for surmise?
Deduct.
Yes, deduct, conclude. One's own death. The death of one's father allows one to understand one's own death. And by the birth of one's son, one can understand the conditions of one's own birth. Summers in the past indicate the summers of the future. Winters in the past indicate the winters of the future. So by this simple deductive syllogism, or it's not an argument at this point, but we can understand that this is going to happen to me. A person who thus realistically understands the creation and destruction of material bodies is no longer subject to these dualities, because he sees himself as separate. So he doesn't become disturbed. Dhiras tatra namuyati, or illusion. By all the different changes that take place, they take place according to the fruit of reactions that infect one's karma, one's body. One who observes the birth of a tree from its seed and the ultimate death of the tree after maturity certainly remains a distinct observer separate from the tree. In the same way, the witness of the birth and death of the material body remains separate from it. So we're witnessing, and we will witness. We don't remember witnessing our birth, but we were there, we've changed our bodies, and we will witness the other one, death. It will happen to the body. And if we have transcendental knowledge, and we know where our shelter is, and know where our shelter is not, and it is not the material body and the material circumstances, then we can go to a different place, to a better place, to our natural place. So that's the intelligent person. An unintelligent man, failing to distinguish himself from material nature, thinks nature to be real, eternally existent, in that sense real, by contact with it, because he wants to exploit it, Purusha Prakriti Stohi, Mungde Prakriti Janiha, he becomes, because of his tendency to want to enjoy it, according to his body, according to the senses and sense objects that exist within his mind, he becomes completely bewildered. What is his bewilderment? I think I am my body. And he enters into the cycle of material existence, again and again identifying with the body. Made to wander, so it goes on more, the picture is getting bigger. Made to wander because of his fruit of work, the conditioned soul, by contact with the mode of goodness, takes birth amongst the sages or demigods. By contact with the mode of passion, he becomes a demon or a human being, and by association with the mode of ignorance, he takes his birth as a ghost or in the animal kingdom. Just as one may imitate persons who one sees dancing and singing, similarly the soul, although never the doer of material activities, becomes captivated by material intelligence and is thus forced to imitate its qualities. And what's the function of intelligence? Huh? But why is intelligence goodness? Mind is born out of goodness, and passion gives birth to intelligence.
Analysis.
And plan making. And because of the plan that takes birth in the intelligence to enjoy, material intelligence, and therefore the person, the soul, the doer, forced to imitate the qualities of matter, even though he is non-material. The soul's material life, his experience of sense gratification, is actually false. It doesn't have anything to do with him. O descendant of Darsaha, just like trees, it's better, easier to state it the other way, just as the appearance of a tree, of the quivering of a tree, when reflected in agitated water, the tree appears to quiver, move, shake, but is the tree actually moving? It's the water that's moving. But it appears to be moving when we're looking at the water. Or like the earth's appearance of spinning, due to one spinning his eyes around. So we could do one experiment over here. Would anyone like to spin for us and tell us if the earth is spinning when he stops? Well, we probably had this experience when we were kids. Spin around and around and around and stop, and the earth appears to be spinning. But I will tell you that the earth is not spinning. It's the illusion. It gives the illusory experience of spinning while the earth is not spinning, or at least not spinning in the way that we're experiencing it is spinning. Well, like the world of a fantasy or a dream, that's the soul's material life as compared to these different varieties of illusion or illusory experiences. So, so Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he comments, we'll read his comment here. When one rides in a boat on a river, the trees on the bank of the river that are reflected in the water also appear to be moving. In the same way, the bewildered conditioned souls consider themselves to be the doer of activities which are in fact merely interactions of the external body with the modes of material nature. The modes of material nature are not us. The impelling forces are not us. And neither is the material body. But this interaction, due to our identification, we experience it as reality. This is Krishna's powerful preaching. Now, he's starting to push towards even further his conclusion. For one who is meditating on sense gratification, material life, although lacking factual existence, does not go away, just as the unpleasant experiences of a dream do not. One who is meditating on sense gratification, material life, although lacking factual existence, material life, although lacking factual existence, it does not go away, just as the unpleasant experiences of a dream do not. And there was a famous story of that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told that really parallels this, called the wedding party. I'm sure you're familiar with it, how the people were going to the wedding in the village down the river. And it was to begin the next morning, and they got in the boat at night. They hired the boatman to float down the river, and they were planning on resting all night long, and they'd be there present at the village where they wanted the next morning. And they went to sleep in a merry mood, and they woke up the next morning, and they were so surprised when they saw that they were in the same place that they started. And then they noted the reason why. And the reason was they didn't pull up the anchor. And therefore, their whole anticipation that they would be going somewhere, it did not occur. And that anchor that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was trying to say, that which stops us from going somewhere in spiritual life is just this. What is this?
Meditation.
Huh?
Meditation.
The attachment. Attachment to material sense enjoyment. Unless the anchor is pulled up, we don't move. Unless we stop meditating on it, we don't move forward in spiritual life. Very sobering. So what to do when the mind has these sanskaras? Well, there's many things we can do. One is we can move, say if we can fully focus on Krishna, this is the ideal. If we can meditate on Krishna, on Krishna's service, if we make that our meditation, and Prabhupada gave us such a movement that allows us to do that because it's always expanding. There's so many things that we can meditate upon for service. He gave us in relationship to book distribution, he said, double it. Now meditate on how you're going to double it every year, the book distribution. That'll give you something to think about. So we either meditate on Krishna directly, Krishna's service, and that will take us, that will cut immediately. And that was the basic system used by Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, giving so much service to do, such a mission, such an expansive mission. The mind is controlled and doesn't have time to think of sense enjoyment. And if we can't do it directly like that, always think of Krishna, of Krishna's service and mission, we do it a little indirectly, that we learn how to use things in an appropriate way and enjoy in an appropriate way, so we, our progress may be a little more gradual, but we'll get there, as opposed to just giving up and just indulging our senses completely in ignorance and take us in the opposite direction that we want to go. So this one should be done under guidance. And it may not be as fast as this one, but it's certainly better than this one, and it's maybe the best thing according to our capacity, our personal capacity. But what Krishna wants to really tell us is that either you go this way or you go this way. Go, or rather come to me, and our goal is the goal is to be absorbed in thoughts of me. So Krishna, remember, he's speaking this Uddhava Gita after the 10th canto, and how to get there, how to be in this world but not of this world, and the answer is it will come. And it's coming that we have to develop our attachment to Krishna, and we have to act in a practical way when dealing with the material world. I mean, we have to deal with the material world, either by not dealing with it, like the Avanti Brahmana will not deal with it anymore, I've had enough, or he will go this way, or someone goes this way, or one will just be so pure, he just neutrally observes the material world and uses everything in Krishna's service. But the point is Krishna's service. The point is Krishna. And the point is the hearing and chanting about Krishna, because if we don't hear and chant about Krishna, we'll never have an opportunity to think about him, because we won't have any content to think about, to be attracted to be in amazement of, to be happy about. We won't be able to think about Krishna if we don't hear about Krishna. So therefore, Shravanam is the basis of Kirtanam Smaranam. We have to hear about Krishna. Even to chant Hare Krishna, the Kirtanam, we have to hear Krishna's names, or hear that we should chant Hare Krishna. So therefore, I'll read just the end of this last paragraph in the purport to 56. After one awakens from a dream, the dim reflection of the dream may linger in one's memory. Similarly, one's engaging in the devotional service of the Lord may be troubled sometimes by the dim reflection of sinful life. One should therefore become strong in Krishna consciousness by hearing the Lord's instructions to Sri Uddhav. 57. Therefore, O Uddhav, do not try to enjoy sense gratification with the material senses. See how illusion based on material dualities prevents one from realizing the self. Even though neglected, and now, okay, we'll read that and then we're coming to the very end. So Krishna, this is basically the conclusion. And then the next chapter is an example of this conclusion. A story, the Avanti Brahman, who exemplifies the conclusion that he said in 57, which is more or less the essence, the detachment point. Do not indulge in sense gratification with your blunt material senses, as translated here. Do not try to enjoy sense gratification with the material senses, because you cannot enjoy with the material senses because you're not your body. You're an eternal soul. You're separate. See how illusion based on material dualities prevent one from realizing the self. So stop it. Slowly, gradually, whatever, but stop it. End it. It's not you. It will bring you further entanglement in one level of body or another. But a material body means suffering because of birth and death. So Vishwanath Chakravarti, short comment, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, short comment. Meditation on the objects of the senses with the spirit of enjoyment is the cause of all anartas. Therefore, one should give up such meditation, realizing that it is only due to ignorance that one accepts the body as the self. Attachment to the material body, which is not the self, is the cause of illusion. This is the purport of this verse. Purport. The Supreme Lord instructs, this is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's short comment. The Supreme Lord instructs Uddhav that an intelligent person should realize the uselessness of trying to gratify the senses unnecessarily. Seeing things as being without a relationship to Lord Krishna, that's unnecessary. If by seeing the pathetic condition of the conditioned souls, one becomes determined to realize his constitutional position, he should be considered a genuine philosopher. So, and also remember the nature, the instructions given in the previous chapter of how to control the analogy given about the horses in the mind. You know, let them out a little bit, but pull them back. Because if it becomes too abrupt, then the horses will break free. They'll be too strong, and they will break free. But the purpose of giving them a little bit of reins, rope, is to guide them and pull them back and restrict them so that they do what you want, not what they want. So now we're moving towards, in 58 and 59 is what Krishna says that will prompt Uddhava's question about the Avanti Brahmana, that will cause Krishna to tell the pastime of the Avanti Brahmana. Even though neglected, insulted, ridiculed, or envied by bad men, or even though repeatedly agitated by being beaten, tied up, or deprived of one's occupation, spat upon or polluted with urine by ignorant people, one who desires the highest goal in life should, in spite of all these difficulties, use his intelligence to keep himself safe on the spiritual platform. In other words, the kind of detachment that Krishna has talking about here, he's saying it's possible, and we're going to tell you the pastime of the Avanti Brahmana that will show it. So one may say, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, how can one live without indulging in sense gratification? These two verses provide the answer. If one is driven out, taunted, insulted, deprived of his livelihood, or spat upon, he should simply tolerate these inconveniences and protect himself with his good intelligence by remaining fixed in self-realization. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, if one realizes the misery suffered in the field of material activities and thus becomes busy in trying to find a solution, either by increasing his material enjoyment or by renunciation of sense gratification, he will not be able to attain the ultimate goal of life. In this regard, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs us. So detachment and enjoyment are the two sides of material life. So Mahaprabhu instructs us how to get the actual goal. One can chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking himself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than the tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. If one seriously follows this advice, then the temptation for increasing material enjoyment and the simple renunciation of the fruits of karma will not capture one. So either enjoyment nor renunciation, the devotee is neutral. If one humbly chants Krishna's names, he will become successful. The best means for achieving auspiciousness is to become sober, tolerant, and free from false ego. Freedom from false ego means to identify oneself as servant of Guru, Vaishnavas, Krishna. Sober, one has to realize the nature of the material world and that he is not a part of this material. And tolerant means it all happens to me according to my karma. Matraspasis to count the as, sitas nas, dukkha daha, agamapayano, anityas. It will come, it will go. It should be tolerant. And then Uddhava replied, oh, best of all speakers, please explain to me how I might properly understand this. How can I live in this way? O soul of the universe, the conditioning of one's personality in material life is very strong. That's a good point. And therefore it is very difficult even for learned men to tolerate the offenses committed against them by ignorant people. Only your devotees who are fixed in your loving service and who have achieved peace by residing at your lotus feet are able to tolerate such offenses. What a wonderful point he's making. You can't do it just by knowledge alone. You have to become a devotee. You have to be achieving the depth of peace. What's that verse? Can you guess? What is the one I'm thinking of? I didn't give you even one clue. Yes. Brahma Bhuta Prasaratma. Yes, like that, on that platform. So only when one is so deep can one be that peaceful. You cannot imitate, you cannot bluff, cannot jump as if because I want to be, I am. It doesn't work in that way. So the purport here in the comments, here's the purport first, and this is the final purport we'll read, and then we'll read just two short comments, and then we will finish for today. Unless one becomes advanced in the process of hearing and chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord, theoretical learning cannot make one actually saintly. One's conditioned personality, the result of long material association, is very difficult to overcome. Therefore, we should humbly take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, who has so wonderfully explained to Sri Uddhav the real meaning of knowledge. Comment by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, short. Even learned people who know that they should tolerate abuse are unable to do so, because theoretical learning alone cannot make one saintly. On the other hand, the devotees, because they possess a similar nature to that of the Supreme Lord, they remain peaceful in all conditions of life because they always reside under the shade of the Lord's lotus feet. How wonderful. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, as long as one has a propensity for material enjoyment and thus is absorbed in matter, he cannot attain peace. By taking shelter of a so-called spiritual master who desires material enjoyment, liberation, or mystic perfections, one's restlessness in the form of material desires will not decrease. Only by the good influence of the devotees' association and following their instructions can one make tangible advancement in spiritual life. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Uddhav Gita ki jai, Sri Krishna Sri Uddhav ki jai, Sri Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much. So, we've actually completed that chapter, and we had, and that means there's no class tomorrow. What to do? In the next chapter, Mataji Narayani will give you this stunning story. She will present you with it. It's so powerful, the story of the Avanti Brahmana. And then, again, we shall hear about Sankhya. Sankhya, again, more about this universe. Krishna must think this is so important that we understand the difference between us and this entire universal configuration, because he's going to say it again, but this time will be the last time in the 24th chapter. And then, in the 25th chapter, which I'll, Krishna willing, I shall is the three modes and beyond. Then, 26, about the Aila Gita, very heavy chapter. Pararava, and then deity worship, directly worshiping Krishna. And then, Jnana Yoga, and then, it's over. The Uddhava Gita is over. And then after Krishna speaks this to Uddhava, we will hear what Uddhava does with this knowledge. And then, we don't even want to talk about what we'll hear about then. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. But are you getting a sense of the Uddhava Gita and where it's moving? Through the intellectual process, it's separating for us from our body and moving us towards the lotus feet of Krishna with great devotion. Everything ends in bhakti. Yes, correct. There is no class tomorrow. Next class is Wednesday. No? Wednesday, Thursday, yes. Wednesday and Thursday, but yes, yeah. For sure. Because we transferred.
18 to 16.
Yes.
Wednesday
is
the next class.
Yes, so it's Wednesday and Thursday. Because we put this class, this Saturday's class, the Tuesday's class. It consumed it. I can see there's a benefit to going a little more slowly, but there's a benefit to going quickly in some sense, because you get an overall heavy impression of something like that. That's one of the heaviest chapters that I've seen.
It wasn't rushed. You gave enough to each.
No, I did. Yeah. And I read more or less all the commentaries that I said. Powerful. Well, I guess that's what we expect from the words of the all-powerful. Okay, Hare Krishna. Thank you.